Welcome to the Witness Underground podcast. I'm Scott Homan, the host of the podcast, as well as the director of the feature documentary, also Witness Underground. We've been doing a screening series every week and for the last couple of months, and a Q&A at the end of every single screening of the film in a virtual film festival style screening. And the guests are able to interact with myself and artists who sometimes show up. In this particular episode, three people join us for the entire Q&A for about an hour. And we have Christopher from a band called Sci-Fi Delic. We have Gina Brown, who is an actress. And we have Brie, who recently left the religion, and she writes. Talk a lot about their different creative projects, their perspectives on their different shunning experiences and how they've handled that. Creation of art, music, doing therapy, movement, meditation can all help to cope while in the religion, and also the healing process after leaving and how it opens up your consciousness. All in all, this was a really fun conversation that went in a lot of different directions, and it was an absolute pleasure to hang out with the three of them, and I'm happy to share this with you. I hope you enjoy it. We talk about dance, acting, and writing, and Gina has a new streaming series she's pitching. Right now, her and her partner have a TikTok channel that's doing really well. Christopher has a decades-long music project called Sci-Fi Delic, with a band member who goes by Caustic, and he was a former higher-up at the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses called Bethel, and later left the religion and now does this music project, which heavily features that topic of leaving the faith and the faith's teachings. Gina has a new project she's making with her partner. It's a series about being bad at love, an unlikely couple coming together and falling in love. Just so happens it's a true story for her and her roommate. The two are from very unlikely worlds, coming together in this unique way. Her partner is from the Persian community, and she's a former Jehovah's Witness exploring a same-sex relationship. For her partner, it's her first time. They're getting very big on TikTok. Gina was traumatized by an elder at her father's funeral. At that important event, they tried to coerce her to believe in their faith and to return to their religion. So she's planning to interweave that into the script that they're developing to pitch as a TV series, as well as incorporating how her sister nearly died giving childbirth because of the blood transfusion ban that Jehovah's Witnesses have for all members. Bree's working on a book that is about empowering young women. When she was in the religion, she'd go to this park to escape from whatever was going on and discovered an interesting history of this place and inspired the story of this book. She talks a bunch about how she's planning to do this, she's restarting this book writing process and how that also influenced her to finally leave the religion. We talk a little bit about different tools to help with past triggers, attachment issues, and different baggage, and what it takes to identify those things. We get into different interpretations of how the religion taught when the end of the world was going to come and how we interpreted that and used that to figure out when the end of the world was going to come when we were in the religion, which is a pretty funny topic. Check out witnessunderground.com for way more videos and information like this if you like this episode, and please subscribe and follow on the different platforms that we're on, especially YouTube. It's important to subscribe there because that unlocks a lot of different things that we get to do, especially once we hit 1,000 subscribers. And it's been awesome to see that number growing in the last few months really fast, and I really appreciate everybody paying so much attention to the project. It's been really rewarding. And the one way you can watch Witness Underground right now is on Patreon, patreon.com/witnessunderground. There will be more other avenues coming soon, but that is the one way to directly support the project, directly support the artist grant. 20% of all the money that comes into the Patreon goes to an artist grant that the people in the movie and myself and a couple of others will help decide who gets the money, and then we'll follow that artist as they go create their art project and then have them on again when they've created the thing that they wanted to do. And we're really excited because a bunch of people have signed up. And if you are interested in that, go ahead and go to the website. There's a grant link at the top, and you can also apply for that money. And we're already raising money for round two. So when the film is more publicly available is when we will give out the first grant. And then as more people join and the money grows, so we'll do another one and another one. And I'm really excited about that. It's like a really fun part of the activism to kind of give back, not just extract money for a piece of art or activism, but also like create some new art and have that affect people, and people can enjoy, not only the artists going to enjoy that moment, but also like the people get to experience that art. And I'm really stoked to see how that all plays out. So thank you for supporting the project. We've had a huge flush of people coming in, and I've been loving getting on other people's podcasts and exposing people to this film who may not have heard of it before. And one more thing at the beginning of this episode is all three of them kind of actually one more person, there's four people at the beginning, all give their review of the film, and it's very interesting to have completely different perspectives. Some of them were kind of born adjacent to the religion, some were deep in, some had a really hard time leaving and left really late, and another one never had any association with religion at all. But so a lot of different perspectives, even though there's only four people in the Q&A. Anyways, absolute joy, and we have another one coming from last week's series. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast, paying attention, subscribing on YouTube. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thanks again. Enjoy the episode. Yeah, great. Okay, I'm going to pull people up on the screen, and you don't have to turn your mic on. A small group so we can be a little more freeform. Thank you so much for joining, and I would love to hear what you thought of the film.
The film like definitely hits close to home. It's like my era of being a teen or like early 20s in the org. And my husband, the reason we met was that he was in he came out to be in a band. He was from California. And a friend of mine passed away actually, which was part of the reason I stayed in the org really tragically. But he was a bass player in my friend's band, and he came out, he was best friends with my best friend's boyfriend, and then he came out to be in the band, and they played out, and there was a music scene in like the New England area back then, similar, you know.
Cool.
With kids coming out from all over the areas. Yeah,
I would love to talk more about that as we get going through the conversation, but thank you. Yeah, I'm glad it hits home. That's part of the reason I want to make it, because it wasn't just me that had this kind of experience. This whole community, I found this whole community that the film is about, and wanted to show something that was very real to me. There's a lot of content out there that's about stuff that I understand it, but I didn't really have those experiences. So I'm glad you relate to it.
So you were friends with the kids in the film, or the band members in the film?
I knew, correct? I knew Eric and Cindy, and I had met Chad during my time in Minneapolis. That was my connection. We had done some creative work years after leaving the religion. We knew each other in it, and I moved to Minneapolis, and I connected with them. But then, like, years later, we did like creative work, and then we started like having a more professional relationship and creative relationship. And then when I started doing these interviews, they were sort of my first on the list of people I wanted to work with.
How did it start out? Like, how did the conversation go when you came up with the idea, or was it like a gradual thing?
It was a very gradual thing. Like, I started doing a project called XW Coming Out, which is on YouTube. It's the season one is out there. Season two is on Patreon. And then there's the season three is going to be extra content from the film. But I started doing interviews with people, and it started out with the LGBT community kind of randomly. But that's why we called it the coming out stories, is the parallel language. Mm-hmm. And then when I did the crowdfund, like 2 years after starting that, I reached out to them, and they were like interested in working together. But it wasn't even necessarily clear in my mind. I thought I was going to interview like 30 people, and I've never seen a documentary that had 30 people in it. But I thought I would interview all these different people around the world. And then I started seeing like the XW community online. It wasn't clear in my mind that we were going to make this film. I started with them. It was going to branch out, and it's still, I did a lot of other interviews before and since then that are part of that other project, actually be coming out. But this felt like a standalone thing.
Scott.
Yeah.
Hi, Chris. I was wondering who you made the film for.
I just wanted to say awesome. It was awesome, Scott. I loved it. Every single bit of this film was amazing. And I look forward to what happens to it in the future, because you, my friend, have got an awesome thing going here, and I hope that it gets big, you know.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. That's high praise.
Yeah, certainly. I gotta go, but I just wanted to say that it was awesome.
Thank you, Brandon. I really appreciate that. No, we'll be in touch. Brandon's one of our patrons on the Patreon channel, and really nice to see you, Brandon. Hi, Gina.
I had a question for you.
Yeah, please.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
That really hit home, the film. I'm a bit older than the people in the film, but I'm from the originally from the Pittsburgh area. So it was more like mid-80s. And we also had a huge music scene out there. We come from a family of musicians. Several of us have gone different directions. So I was really surprised to see how organized what was really going on there in Minnesota. I was shocked because I always thought, well, you know, I come from a very large and very well-known popular family within the organization, but I was the first one to get out and probably the one who was the most afraid of doing anything like that. So there's just so much resonated with this film, but I was wondering who you made the film for. Is this for people like you have here, or was this something to be more educational for people who don't know anything about what, you know, our type of experience has been?
I'll do my best to answer that, but I'd love to have you tell me what you think as well after I give my spiel. It's a great question, and it was an important decision to make early on. And some of the decisions I made were the people I worked with, the editor that I hired. Her name's Sean Walmsley from England, and she did a remote edit, story edit. And she had like 10, 15 hours of interview footage, but she wasn't a witness. And so like that was a point that I wanted to be able to appeal to a greater, wider audience, because talking to ex-Jehovah's Witnesses through film, it, although it's a sizable audience, a couple million people globally, it's just working in the echo chamber. So I wanted to make an impact, a social impact with the film. And I wanted to reach regular folks who just are interested, and I don't know that we accomplished that goal, but I feel like it's an entertaining film, and like music plays a big part in the emotional arc of the film. And that was a big part of my creative input. And it's like the opening 5 or 10 minutes, five or seven minutes is really sort of educating the audience while also kind of exposing them to all the characters in the film. And then it's sort of like character development within, like, what's the culture like inside the religion, sort of humanize the people, because usually that doesn't happen in XW documentaries or films. You don't really get to know, you don't really relate to their struggles. And so I want to do that, which is important. And it was important to me also to have the like landing at the end where it's like, oh, it doesn't just end with Ryan crying and upset that he doesn't get to talk to his dad anymore, which is what almost all the other films do. It has something more, like the story after. And that, like, if somebody were to watch it who left or who's in, that they would feel good about like the future, because a lot of people can get stuck and struggle with feeling just a loss of the community. And so that was important to me, to have a landing for that community. But also I kind of, instead of like, we did do the text at the end, it's like, this is what they're up to now kind of thing. But I wanted to have like a bigger insight into like what happens to people after they leave, just to kind of like show to anyone a greater insight into what they did later, I wouldn't say that they weren't like successful with their music, but they have careers and they have lives, and they're like, things have calmed down a lot. And maybe that's enough. It doesn't need to be like a rock star, legendary, glorious end. But I did like to, one of my big things I wanted to do was I have a big background in music. Personally, I played in 3 different bands before kind of taking the religion seriously. I had a band in the religion, and then I had a band after leaving. And so I've always had this connection to music. And then I lived in Vietnam for 5 years, and I focused completely on filmmaking with musicians there. And so the style of filmmaking that's in the film at the opening and the ending and a little bit in the middle is my 2-camera style of like kind of rough handheld, a bit like shaky cam to whatever the music kind of needs to give the energy of the sound. And I don't know, that's extra information, but I would love to know what you thought, what kind of audience it hits the most, Christopher, or all of you actually.
I didn't know what to expect from the film. I just learned about it recently. And so it came as a total surprise to me. I had my girlfriend in here for a little bit, but she's traveled for the past 24 hours. So she was starting to doze off. Like, oh, that was familiar. That was me, the Kingdom Hall. I was a kid. But I think that for me, it seemed like I would need to watch that. If I didn't know anything about the organization, I would need to watch it with someone who had been involved, because it would conjure up a lot of questions. Like, for example, she thinks my parents are the most evil people on the planet, the most evil, horrible people. But I'm like, well, you've got to understand, you know, they raised 7 children the best that they could. they are, you know, after my dad retired, they became missionaries, and they, I love what was brought up in the film where it's like, these people, they love us just in a very different way. And there was so much, I really like that throughout the film where it's like, look, we're not mad at these people. We don't hate these people. It's a difficult thing to understand when you're looking from the outside in. And so I really liked that. I thought that if she had stuck around for that, she would see, I'm not the only one who says that. So, well, how could you, you know, your parents are so great when they won't even talk to you? Mm-hmm. It's like, because they are great. They just don't talk to me for their own reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think that the beginning portion definitely helped touch on, you can't teach the whole religion and then jump into a film. So I thought that you did hit on it. I do think that someone who is solely from the outside looking in, maybe they'd be encouraged from the film to do a little more digging into why these things happen. So, you know, I thought that it really could be for anyone, but of course I can only speak from my perspective where just so much of it is exactly my life. So I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I really appreciate your input. Anyone else have any thoughts on that topic?
I was thinking when you first put out the call to, you know, share, I was thinking, oh, I should share this with my brother. He was disfellowshipped when he was 21. He left a little before then, but I think sometimes it's triggering for him to watch XJW content at this point. So we don't always go there. And then my aunt also, she was disfellowshipped when she was 16. And same thing, like we've mended our relationship since we came out, but like I sometimes don't want it always to be about that. Whereas I have, you know, friends that either supported us through our transition out of the org, or they didn't know like what we were going through when we were in the org, and people that I've met since we've moved out to California, I'm like, they're witness adjacent, like they know the stories, and this would like really help them to kind of contextualize things. And I think that's like a big audience.
It almost seems like you're mentioning the education audience. Like it's an education film that could give an insight to a culture, like cultural anthropology or maybe even mental health side. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I just think there's so much study being done on music and like the vibration of music on our, you know, neurological health and things like that. Like anybody that's interested in music and how it kind of helps our sense of wellness, because I think that's a big part of the story, you know, not just the community, but the actual creating of art and just being immersed in music. Definitely for me, even though I'm not a musician myself and my husband is, I know that music like is something that helped me like kind of cope like when I was in. I kind of feel bad for, you know, you hear some stories where kids were not allowed to listen to music at all, like popular music in the org. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case. My parents were kind of really loosey-goosey with it.
One of the big points in the film, or big I guess factors of the podcast, now that the film is out, the film and the podcast, is that music or even self-expression of any kind through any kind of creative outlet, it could be knitting or drawing or writing or anything, painting, can have a huge mental health impact for the positive. And how I often pitch the film is it's something like self-expression leads to freedom of thought, which then leads to taking action to help your life. Mm. I think I haven't done research on that. I just have that notion. And that was true for me. I think like, I was playing like rock and then like more punk rock, and that kind of music exposed me to lots of new ideas when I was younger, as a teenager in early 20s. And I think I got a lot of my life philosophy from those music scenes and the lyrics that were coming from it that was outside of the realm of the witness literature and culture, that really helped me like see things from a different perspective. And even just listening to music could be powerful.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, I think I mentioned it on Patreon. Like I gave myself permission to dive into my art again. And then it's really interesting to look back like on what I was working through now. And I think somebody looking from the outside looking in, like they might have looked for patterns and were like, oh, she like, she was out way longer, like way before, you know, she admitted to it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's an interesting thing to explore, like music and art, like how it opens up our consciousness, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Gina, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, really well done, Scott. Oh my gosh, I was like transported, seriously. Also, like I know Eric. Like oh, wow. I was at that convention in Rochester. That's why I'm in Rochester, Minnesota. So I agree in Christopher High. I live in California now, but I'm from Minnesota. And so like I knew Chloe. My sister had that
CD. That's amazing.
I recognize that song. And I'm just like, this is the odds of like us connecting is just so bizarre and amazing at the same time. Yeah. So thank you for inviting me. I loved the film. I thought it was an amazing storytelling of like, you know, somebody who like the creative artists who are like stifled and they aren't allowed self-expression, and then they get in this band and there's that fine line between like, is it worldly or is it witness enough, and like you're walking that invisible line and everyone's eyes are on you. I was one of those bad association spoils useful habit girls who I never believed in the religion myself. And so it really hit home for me when Cindy was talking about the elders meetings and she was talking about like the experiences she had and she had to tell all these men, and it was like, it was bringing me back. So I definitely feel this film really can resonate for ex-witnesses who like want to like get out of the religion. I also, my girlfriend was kind of in and out and she was catching some things, but she said to me, she was like, yeah, I think if I didn't have these conversations with you, I might not know what the truth is or what elders are, you know? And it's like, because I've had these conversations with her, she was able to like follow. But overall, I loved also the message of hope at the end. I think that was a great way to end it, especially through the loss of the brother and just like, oh, that was so gut-wrenching. And, you know, he found his own Bible. It was like the hero's journey. So you were really able to follow like that awesome storytelling arc. I did kind of disagree with Christopher in the sense that like, I am all about, like, I am not about like, these are just nice people. Like, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm sorry. But just kind of like my viewpoint and my experience is like a bit more skewed. So I'm coming from like, out your poor experiences, out the times you were abused, out the times that they hid stuff that they shouldn't, tell the actual truth. And I think your film did exactly that. Mm. And so I'm all for like speaking your honest like path. And yeah, I just loved it. So thank you. I'm going to invite my sister to the next one. Hopefully she can make it because she also knows Eric. And that whole group was like her friend group, which is crazy. Mm. So anyway.
Wow, yeah, that's special.
Yeah. Small world.
One of the fires under my ass to make this film was activism. Like I probably, like all of us, suffer. Christopher, you mentioned that your parents have talked to you. Like that's a form of emotional abuse, the shunning that the religion enforces or coerces. Like your parents probably don't want to do it, but they have to do it. And there's like, you know, they're being coerced and manipulated to do that. And that for me was really painful. I'm happy that Ryan's story paralleled mine so much. Like, I'm not in the film. I have a couple words. I have a couple little cameos in there visually and audio, but I didn't really want to make a film about myself. So there was a nice separation, but I was so happy that it paralleled my story. And I guess like anyone's would, but Ryan's is special. And there's so many losses all at once, loss of innocence, loss of family, loss of his brother, loss of his father, loss of community. And on some level, we all experience at least some of those. And that's like the real crux of the film in terms of the impact I'm hoping to have, that people realize that the religion is, it's dangerous and disruptive to society in general. And they're not just a benign group of well-meaning Christians. They're actually doing a lot of harm to society. And you should consider that when you see them and you talk to them. Like the individuals might not be acting like they're doing the best they can with the information they have, but like they're victims actually. And we are because we're being shunned, but like they are because they're being manipulated and like they're giving up their life. and maybe they're even more victims because of like they're still controlled.
Well,
like,
Scott, that's one of the things I really liked about the film too. Because, and I didn't want to come off as saying, you know, they're just like good people that are just a little misguided. I mean, don't get me wrong, Gina, I'm pissed. You know, like the couple of days after I had gotten disfellowshipped and I wanted to talk to my younger brother, who moved around a lot. So I called my older brother to see if he could give me his phone number. And the last thing I ever heard from him is, yeah, I'll give you his number, but we can't talk again. I'm like, whoa. He gave me his number, and that was in 1995.
He gave you his number last century.
Beautiful baritone voice. Yes. You know, and but even the thing that happened to him with the funeral, that happened to me. Oh, that happened to me. And it wasn't even, that was when my grandmother died, and she was Catholic. That was my dad's mom. She had nothing to do with the witnesses. Didn't really like it. But yeah, I was at the funeral, but I couldn't come to the you know, to the wake afterwards or anything like that.
Like you couldn't be there because
like waited till the last moment.
Because they are there.
Because there's a bunch of other witnesses came. Yes. And so my dad arranged for a limo to pick me up and take me wherever, just not there. I'm like, I'm from out of town right now. So my younger brother actually went with me. He's like, that's ridiculous. Let's go. So there, I mean, that scene that happened to him, that's why it just resonates so well. And it's, I don't think it's like an echo chamber at all. I've seen other things where it's like, you know, about the witnesses or about the, you know, Mormons or whatever. And it just kind of becomes redundant, you know, and some of the stuff is just like, with this, it was so real. Like, these are real people. And especially, I'm also a musician. As artists, life is hard enough anyway. We're not, you know, we're an odd bunch. And so then when you're in that kind of a situation, and you really showed that, like they were, they're your typical artists who actually had, you know, a pretty cool thing going over there, you know, being able to put on the shows and have a band and do all of that. But then also being in touch with reality and being able to stand up and be strong. The thing I liked about the ending was that it reminded me a little bit of like when you would watch a documentary about, you know, maybe somebody lost their family and some sort of murder spree or something like that. And you think to yourself, how on earth can they even like get up in the morning, let alone be on a film and talk about it? Mm-hmm. So that always kind of like, I'm just like shocked by that kind of strength. It's real similar to what these people went through. And then yet at the end, you see, hey, you know, they're playing music again. They have their jobs. They're functioning perfectly fine. They didn't let this kill them. And I really appreciated seeing that.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy about that too. I think that needed to exist in the ex-Jehovah's Witness film world. Because most of the films, the format is like you cry, mm-hmm. They get the person to cry on camera, and then they cut to credits, and you just like feel pity and sad. And I'd see these films, and like the information's triggering enough, then to have that, like, I want to tell someone about my past, and mm-hmm. it's like an impossible task. I want to say, like, you know what? I'm not going to talk to you about my past. You can watch this film I made, and then we can talk, because I'm kind of proud of having come from that culture. It was tricky and very strange, but there was some cool stuff going on, and there's really good people. And I want mm-hmm. now, I feel like a lot of people could like resonate with that. Maybe you can tell me, but sounds like you're saying something like that. Like, yeah, I had something like that, and it was cool. It wasn't all terrible. There wasn't just like a compound in the middle of nowhere with a bunch of weirdos. We had lives as well.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It was kind of. I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania, so it was a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, for me, we're very newly out. I guess less than 2 years now. Mm. And I didn't stumble upon Apostate stuff. Like, everyone thinks that that's what turned us, you know. It was those questions, like I put in the chat, like, doesn't, you know, it was science and like looking and like actually trying to like study like all through COVID and being like, this is just not matching up. And but the thing, when I first like got the courage to kind of look at something, it was like Amber Scora's experience.
Her book's, you know, great. Like,
yeah,
I just read it like a couple weeks
her
ago.
TED Talk. Yeah. And like, you know, those kinds of stories or interviews like that I watched that like it was like their end, you know, it wasn't like a tragic ending. Like they're like on a path to like some, you know, great things, or just live, you know, just actually live. And I just think the more stories that are out there are the better. And I think it's, it feels like it's easier to come across now than it was before. I don't think my brother had access to that, like back, mm-hmm. you know, 2 decades almost ago, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy to make something that, I mean, it's not just me, obviously, there's a whole group of us that help make this thing, but make something that it's going to last a while and have an impact. And there's like 100,000 people leave their religion every year, and it might even be more now because of COVID and this exodus that's happening, that there's a tool and one more tool in the tool bag. Like, I feel like this film just adds to like the great collection of content that people are putting out. And it's not that I don't like the other films. Like, if they didn't exist, I would have made those, you know, I would have tried to make something on the topic of child sex abuse or on the topic of the blood transfusions and the deaths that are coming from that and how tragic it is. But there's a lot of other content about that. And for me, shunning had a huge impact. And so, and it's universal for like anyone who leaves a community. And there's a lot of like life parallels. I think what I've been realizing from the other people that are not related at all to this, not even witness adjacent, just like normal average people, watch it and their perspectives are like, wow, like I grew up Catholic and I totally resonated with this statement and that statement and this position. Or someone from the Philippines, a friend of mine in LA, watched it with me recently, and he was like, oh man, I totally get this like disconnect from culture and all the pressure. And like, he related to like completely different things, but like it has such a humanizing effect that like a lot of people could relate, is what I'm realizing. Which makes you feel really good. It's not just this, or even seeing like, I mean, if you can get fired, and like that's a similar effect. Like my entire group of people and my like connection to money is now gone, and it can happen like that. It's a similar. You can have a similar reaction to even just a normal part of life. I mean, getting fired is not exactly normal, but it happens to a lot of people.
Yeah. I have a friend that I met like. Last year coming out of the org, I joined like a storytelling group. It just happened upon it. It was like the best thing that happened because I was hearing all these different stories from not just, you know, XGWs, like that there was this common thread. And yeah, one friend was trying to kind of like work through that. Just like she had built up this whole school and had it just ripped from her, you know, and got ousted. And lost everything. And it's a very similar story. We're like grappling with very similar things.
All of you are related to creativity in some way. Bri, you said your husband makes music. Do you also do something creative? Christopher, you make music. And Gina, you can tell. I would love to hear you tell about your project at some point.
But... Oh, thanks. My project definitely stems from like my own experience. I, however, am an actor. So like, unlike you, I'm like, I will be acting in this, you know, you're like, I want it one step away from me. I'm like, I want to be in the depths of this. And I think that's part of like, you know, my own healing journey and my way of interpreting what I've been through. My project is about, you know, being bad at love, and the love is universal. And it stems from like a lot of how I was raised. And I'm sure you guys, you know, have your own stories of like, you know, what you've been through being raised a Jehovah's Witness, and kind of that lens of how it separates you from people, and it makes you really scared, and it makes you scared to be who you are. It makes you like a victim. It can make you feel like you don't know who you are, because there's like not really an identity growing up as a witness. You just like don't question everything and do as you're told kind of thing. So yeah, my story is about, I mean, it's a love story, about me and my roommate falling in love, but within it, it's like flashbacks of like trauma of like why I am the way I am, or like why, you know, why am I, they say if it's hysterical, it's historical. So it's just like all the things that we've been through and how it kind of carries on and into our adulthood until we can really look at it and be like, what's really going on under here? And it's like acting from that place of, you know, inner child stuff. Brie and Christopher, I don't know if you guys were raised Jehovah's Witnesses, but obviously I was. And so that had a huge impact on just like my perspective. And so my whole thing is I do want to continue. I want to kind of lift the veil on the mystery that is Jehovah's Witnesses in a sense through storytelling. And, you know, my sister almost died giving birth to my nephew because she refused blood transfusion. She was on her deathbed. She's a miracle. She's alive. Like that's going to be interwoven probably in the storyline. My dad passed away, who was a witness, suddenly and during the funeral, just like in your movie, Scott, like we were in the front row and the elder was like, and I want to invite Rick Brown's girls back into the Kingdom Hall. And like, wow. It was now about us coming back to the religion when it was supposed to be about my dad passing away. And like, it was just so traumatizing that I can't not put it through and like talk about it and just like express it. Because if I've been in so much pain for so long because of this organization that like, this is my, you know, this is my music or my painting, you know, but it's through acting. So that's kind of like what me and my girlfriend are developing at this point.
What do you know the format you're going to create?
Right. Yeah. We have it's a pilot for a TV show. We have TV series. Yep. Dramedy. We want to add some levity into it. You know, it's not all just like gloom and doom. You know, and it's also like sharing the perspective of my girlfriend who is of Middle Eastern descent. She's first generation Persian American. So it's like, she's also coming out and like having her experience of being with a woman for the first time. So it's like a dual storyline, like two very unlikely worlds coming together in a TV show. Yeah. And so we're in the middle of like pitching and rewrites and like trying to get that off the ground. We might try to get more like TikTok involvement and like just get more like fans on board before anything else happens. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at with it right now.
It's really cool.
Thanks.
I'm glad you're making that.
Wow. Yeah, me too.
Very cool.
Things that kind of helped like, you know, nudge things loose, I guess you'd say, is that, you know, I came up with a story when I was PME, and it was all about, it basically had a feminist angle to it. It was about this woman who designed, she was a landscape artist, or landscape architect, actually, for this, it was a state park that I used to go through all the time as I was a kid. It was kind of like my place to kind of escape. It's down the street from us, but it was an old estate. And during COVID, I was like walking through there a lot. And then I noticed this plaque, and it's told like the story about this landscape architect named Martha Brooks Hutchinson, who went to MIT like at the turn of the century, and she's hired on to like design these gardens and everything. And I was like, what if you were a little girl, like, and your dad was a gardener and you were like really interested in STEM, or, you know, what would we be like to like meet someone like that in a time where, you know, women weren't really hired for those type of things. And I kind of like started outlining a story, and then I was like, yeah, but if I write the story, it's going to, you know, I'm going to have some shade thrown at me. Like the elders aren't going to like this because it's about women, you know, empowering young girls. And I was kind of like, fuck it. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to write the story. And that was sort of, I mean, it was about a year after that I like completely woke up, but it's, I don't know. It is empowering. That's sort of something I put on like the shelf, but I'm like kind of picking it up now and hoping that, I don't know, we'll see where it comes. It'll be like cathartic to actually write it and put it out there into the world. And if for some reason it, you know, gets picked up, then I can tell my story through that.
So this is a script or a book?
Mm-hmm. A book.
A book.
Yeah.
Okay. There's an XCW writers.
Sorry, go ahead.
There's an XCW writers group on Facebook. You might want to join. There's like 100 authors in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a helpful community. Uh-huh. Well, I imagine it's a helpful community. I actually don't participate. But I also want to write a book. I started writing a book in December, and I was also reading Polysecure. I'm going to out myself as being interested in polyamory. But I am not practicing that at the moment, but I'm very curious about it. And the book is about attachment and trauma and polyamory. And it was recommended by my first therapist, and it's a fabulous book, like super well written and researched. And so I was writing my first book. Like I thought I was writing my first book, and while I was reading this other book, and I was like, how do I describe my parents? And I was like, a couple sentences in, like, deeply dysfunctional. And I was like, ah, fuck. My parents were dysfunctional. Maybe that's where my trauma comes from. Maybe it's not even the religion. Maybe it's like my parents had their own issues. I need to unravel that. So like I just dropped it. I was like three paragraphs in. I was like having like an anxiety attack.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to dive into. My brother and I have talked about that. I'm like, you know, this really is a story of like a deeply dysfunctional family. And like, you know, because I do know other XJWs that come out of it and their family does talk to them. And like, they seem to have like fairly normal like relationships, even if they're disfellowship. Hmm. So yeah, it's interesting to look at it from family systems type of angle.
Yeah, I'd love to know more about that. Like the internal family systems is like a whole body of work, right? I've heard about it, but I haven't read about it. That whole world, we have a lot to work on personally. Everyone, you know, not to speak for you guys, but I do.
Yeah, that inner child stuff came up definitely Mother's Day. I don't know if that was true for any of you, just like Mother's Day, Father's Day are like really bad, bad days for me. Even though I am a mom, like I was just like, I can't enjoy this till I like have a cry and like, you know, like work through stuff and journal. And then it was fine.
I guess that'd be a question I'd love to have you all answer, since we have kind of an intimate group, is have you found something that helps? We're talking about creative projects, but have you like worked through therapy or found some activity or something that has helped you in your healing process after the experience of leaving this religion?
Well, I guess I'll go for me, it was actually getting back, into music. So I mentioned I came from a big family. I was the third oldest of seven kids. I was adopted. And so I was the only one in my family who was adopted. And so that comes with its own humongous suitcase of just weird baggage. And, you know, when I was growing up, because, you know, I look different than all my, you know, siblings and my parents, I'm really, really tall. So I also stood out all the time. So it's like, I couldn't hide. And so it's like always, but I was, you know, a great athlete, really good musician when I was a kid. Perfect in school, but it was like I was always trying to like prove myself, because that's one of the things that adopted kids will do, is always try to make sure that you are earning your ability to be where you are. And I always felt so like I owed my parents, who were like 29 and 28 when they decided to adopt a kid. And I could never even understand why they did it. And they always just said, well, because it was the right thing to do. We knew that there was a kid out there. And based on what my birth mother had written down that she was looking for, somebody from a musical family and someone who had a strong religious background, that was them. And so I tried so hard when I was growing up to meet these expectations. And they did do a good, like that family dynamic for us was actually surprisingly good with all of us siblings. We were, you know, my brothers and I and one of my sisters were always really into music. My parents encouraged that. We all took music lessons. There was a, a guy in our congregation who had, he was older. This is like a long time ago. And he was already like in his 70s. He had escaped Poland when they were trying to kill Jehovah's Witnesses there during World War II and came out to Pittsburgh. He was the president of Duquesne University of Music, and I had 2 weekly music lessons with him every week for years. And so he really studied music, got really deeply into it, and he was also a mentor. Come to find out, I'm like, you know, why isn't he an elder? I was wondering this when I was like in my middle teens. So we talked about everything. Sometimes our music lesson was just talking, because I always just doubted everything, even though I tried to pretend like I was in it, really into it. And he said, I asked him, and he's like, you know, he's like, that's a good question. And I'll tell you, he's like, for me to be an elder and to feel good about this, I need to believe everything that I'm teaching. Just like when you play a song, you can tell if the person's just playing it or if they're really feeling it and really believing it. You can play the song and get an applause and go home and having done your job. But did the people really feel that? Do they remember the sounds, or are they walking away with a feeling? He's like, if you can't do that, you'll never be a great musician. If you can't do that as a JW, you shouldn't be an elder. And I sat there, I'm like, you just gave me a lot. I'm like 13, but that always stuck with me. It's like, okay. When I graduated high school, I did go to college. I studied linguistics. And it was one of those things where people were always making an excuse for me. Well, it's okay that he's doing this because he's using his language skills to help, you know, with the organization, which is true. We moved to New Jersey, and I was giving tours at the Stanley Theater when they rebuilt that for people, you know, foreigners coming in, and I was translating. And then I became a regular pioneer. And then eventually they, you know, wanted to make me a ministerial servant. All along, I'm hearing him in the back of my mind, like, I basically don't believe all this. And I'm thinking, I don't believe any of this. It scared me to death back in the mid-80s when they had the nuclear clock that was going, because I would think, okay, the generation of 1914 will not pass away. So let's see, people born in 1914 are about 69, 70 years old. So that means they probably have another 20 or so years. So all my friends at school and everything aren't going to get killed anytime soon. This is horrifying. This is how I grew up. Then it started dawning on me that this generation of 1914 is passing away really fast. Like, do you mean like one person will still be around? You know, it's like the math doesn't add up. What they brought up about the animals, even in your movie, I thought, it's really strange that Adam and, like, they're showing these pictures of the Garden of Eden and the animals, you know, you got the lamb and the lion, everybody's all chill. And then Adam and Eve sin, and now the lion's going to eat the lamb. Like, where's the connection? I thought that as a kid. Yeah. Why did they start joining in the fun of being bad or whatever? So
it's because of all women.
Sorry, Maria. Yeah. But no, I eventually just like anymore. I really should be not faking through this. And so I, you know, talked to the elders and did the same kind of thing. And what's gotten me through this, to answer your original question, is getting back into music. That's really where my heart has always been. I moved out here to Colorado. It's where I live now. My younger brother also ended up leaving. He ended up really taking his music career. He's in Brooklyn, and he's in a world famous band, travels all over, you know, this is what he does. And he's like, you know, you should really get seriously back into it, because that's what you love. And that's about the only thing that's going to help you heal. That's the only thing. People talking to you won't help you. Nobody's you, and you've got to be able to express yourself. And so that's what worked for me until a couple years ago. I ended up meeting my birth mother. Long story, but she, yeah, it's crazy. And she's a musician, and she's mm-hmm. like, well, you know, she's like, I know it's not the same, but you may have lost your parents, but now you have another one. So I'm like, yeah, it's cool. We can pick up where we left off 50 years ago.
I think I just realized who you are. We've been chatting about Sci-Fi-Delic. Is that your group?
Yeah.
Cool. Yes. I listened to Sci-Fi-Delic all seven of your albums or whatever in the last couple of weeks.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Just like put them on repeat.
Yeah.
So interesting stuff.
That is that's one of the bands I'm in. I have another one too. The Sci-Fi-Delic, the guy, Caustic, which he changed his name to after he left the organization. This guy was like one of the higher ups in Bethel and ended up leaving eventually and started this band about 20 years ago. I joined it about 9 years ago.
Caustic.
And it's all, if you get a chance to listen, if you listen to the music, you can, I'm sure, hear all the messages in it.
Okay, cool.
It,
I love that when people tie in their actual leading experience to the music, to the lyrics. It's really interesting. He's not the only one.
Yes.
I found like 20 different bands that are doing something like that.
So anyways, sorry for rambling on so long.
Oh no, your stories.
Yeah. I'm sure we could do a podcast episode.
Yeah. Art and therapy, meditation, like all of it. But definitely like I haven't been going to therapy. I feel like there gets to be a point where you've kind of talked it through. And it, at least if you have like, you know, some tools, like you can kind of like, you know, that you need to process sometimes, like if you're like going through a difficult time, but it gets to be too much maybe to talk about it every week. So I've been thinking about doing like something somatic. I think like movement, that was something that I kind of like let go to the wayside when I moved out here and like was going through all of it because I felt so exhausted. Like, and I just wanted to dive into like creative stuff, but I was like not doing a lot of the movement that I used to do. So I've been like really like trying to like just like work out really hard and like, you know, dance and do those things again. I think that's a huge piece of it. Like just because you hold that in your body, you know, the trauma.
What type of dance? What kind of music?
Whatever I'm feeling. Like I'm not like a dancer. I mean, I have, you know, took some dance lessons, but not, yeah, it's just like whatever I'm feeling, just like moving to the music and like whatever, it's just for me, like
gotcha.
Yeah,
I've heard of that a lot, about holding trauma in parts of your body or like feeling something in a part of your body. Could you describe like what that's like and like what dance does to that or something?
Probably badly, but you know, like you do physically hold that trauma like in different parts of your body, and like it's energy, you know, like, and it's something that you have to work through. So, you know, if you're feeling like you're like stuck, or you know, you're going through like you know, some deep sadness over something, you feel triggered, a lot of times you just need to like move it out of you, you know, like. And I think the combination of music and dance is such a great thing, or running or whatever. Like, you know, I have my playlist. Everyone has their playlist of songs that like kind of like sustain them, like just getting that on. And like, I find that to be like the most therapeutic thing, like, you know, and not being afraid to like cry. Like I don't know about all of you, but like my parents were like, stop crying. Like you're too sensitive. Like, it was considered like not good, and like you almost like panic if you like, I'm like, I just need to cry it out. But that's like a good thing, like it's a relief.
And one of the things I've realized looking into my past, I've always said, oh, I had a great childhood, or like said really positive things. That's like one of the text, like first bullet point, and like the attachment, avoidant, insecure attachment. And like saying positive things about your past, like just blanket, it was all good. And then you realize you're going through something. Like I went through something and I was like, well, why am I feeling this trigger? And I was like, well, I would get sometimes be like consoled and sometimes punished for expressing emotions, and sent to my room. And I was like, I read like hundreds of books while I was grounded, you know? And like, why was I grounded? Mm-hmm. I don't think I was a particularly bad kid. And then, well, maybe, you know, I mean, parents had five kids and they were definitely dysfunctional. And they probably joined a cult because it was like added order to their lives. And it was like they found a community that worked for their dysfunction and brought them some kind of calmness. They just happened to raise kids and not really think about it and not really understand what it's like to be raised around something like an organization like that. So like I've kind of reframed it like my parents joined a cult. I didn't, you know, like it was their choice and I didn't agree with it. And when you're a teenager or 20, you're like, I want to do something else. That's like the most normal coming of age thing ever. You don't want to do what your parents chose to do. But now looking back, it's like, yeah, I mean, they weren't perfect. I think they did what they could with what the tools they had and their emotional states as they were. But I also have like emotional baggage and I need to like figure that out. And like, I like looking back in the past and trying to like, right now I'm like actively recently like trying to figure out why I react to certain situations the way I do. Cause I can like, my mind will start reeling on like this person and like put labels on it. But like that person isn't thinking about this thing that I'm like reacting emotionally to. For them, it's just like some brief moment in time that they like that part of their brain erased and they're using those brain cells for something else. But for me, it's like, I'm reeling, like trying to label them with something and like, why are they such a bad person? But I'm just having an emotional reaction to a trigger. And I don't even know what it is and like where it came from. And it's like, I need like the tools to like unwind that. And I'm not the only one. I'm realizing a lot of people are working on themselves and learning different tools. I'm super curious about how it all works. It's very complex.
It takes a lot of quiet and like, it takes a lot of work to be able to like dive into that stuff. And I think, you know, not everyone has that time, you know?
I'm going to say that, that baggage, it's really hard to know that it's even there. Like I grew up and I've told people this and I've recently stopped saying this, but it's like, you know, I'm actually really glad that I grew up in that organization because there's no telling what kind of person I would have turned out to be. And I've had my friends be like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, I'm a good guy now, but I wasn't a good kid. I was terrible. And I could have gone in so many different directions. So that gave me a way to focus on being good and doing the right thing. And my friends are all like, well, what on earth kind of thing would you have been doing? Like killing small animals or what? I'm like, no. I mean, for example, there's this one time where, you know, I went to all the neighbors' houses and I switched everybody's mail in about 50 different houses so that I could watch them bring each other their mail when they were coming home from work. And I did that. My younger brother would always just go along with everything.
I love that.
And I lived
so innocent, so much innocent.
So I sit there in the middle. This is fascinating. Well, that's what my friends would be. They'd laugh. They're like, that's the kind of stuff? I'm like, yeah. So then, you know, that kept me. They're like, are you crazy? You're being a kid. I mean, yes, a very imaginative kid. I did stuff like that all the time. But then I'd be like, well, no, when I was a teenager, you know, thank God I had those restrictions because, you know, my puberty would have been all over the place. And people are like, yeah, that's normal. What also, are you talking about? Yeah. So I started learning, wait a second. I thought I was like this horrible kid. I was just a kid. I really thought I was so bad. I like had times where I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I just want to stay in bed all day so I don't do something horrible.
Wow. And then the punishments are out of line for your crimes. Sounds like.
Oh my God. Yeah. So then I look back, I'm like, So then do I really look at it as those things really saved me, or did they make, you know, my ability to mature more difficult? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I'm 50 now and I'm finally catching on to things. It's like, Yeah, it like only sunk in recently that, wait a second, we're all probably going to die. You don't understand. I forever thought that this probably wouldn't happen to the point of if I think that Armageddon is about to come, then I'll jump back on board real quick, see if I can.
Even recently.
Honestly, yeah. It's like, wait a second. This is something that most people just grow up knowing. No, my dad was an elder. We went to, you know, every congregation in the tri-state area forever with him giving his talk about, you know, doing the math, you know, 1914. I could have given it for him. I know all of it. And even though I didn't believe a lot of what I was taught, fundamentally, it's still right there, you know? So it's like, wait a second. It really absolutely is not the truth. It's not. They've even changed their teaching on that. I watch these videos and they're like calling out people who left because they couldn't handle it. It was like this Armageddon kind of video. They're like, well, you know, so-and-so left and that's too bad that his faith was shaken about the whole 1914 thing. I'm like, what? Yeah.
I had a different math. The math that I was given was it's not that you're born in 1914. It's that you had to understand the significance of 1914. So you had to kind of been an adult already and understood and been taught how important that coming date was, and then had seen like a bunch of people gathering in a stadium that year. And that was like God's fulfilling prophecy or something. And then those people would be the ones would have to still be alive. So add a couple decades to the number. And then I was doing math on like, if people are taking the wine, drinking the wine at the celebration of Jesus's murder, that number every year was reported. And like, as a number every year, it went down, like those people were dying, but they were like, this number is significant. And the closer it gets to zero, the closer we are to the end. And I was like, okay, well, if I did statistical math, but like, I didn't know what I was doing with math, but I was like, well, it was like 14,000 at this time. And then it was like 10,000. It was 8,000. Mm-hmm. It was 6,000. And then it was 5,000. And I was like, at this rate, the way it's dropping, like the end of the world's in 1996. And I only have like 3 years.
Right.
And like that amount of time in the forward is like as far future as that they can see.
And then all of a sudden it jetted back up. Like,
yeah, that was like a 20,000.
That was like a month before I like, I woke up, even though it's like it's a process, but we had our memorial. My parents came over. My dad is inactive. He does shun me too, which is weird. But and he doesn't believe all of it. But like we're sitting there talking about the anointed, and he said something about the numbers going up. And then I'm like, we're talking about, I've never met anybody that's anointed that's like not kind of crazy. Like we were just like having this like private conversation.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like maybe like they're very imaginative, or they're like maybe like even the witnesses, like the leadership months in advance of the celebration would say that like, don't drink it. And like, if you do, we're going to like kind of think less of you, because people that do that usually have mental health problems. It's like, whoa. Okay. So the people that are this close to God that are going to transform into like a powerful angel and rule over the entire universe are mentally deranged. And then like now it just like growing up, we didn't know who the leadership of the church was, right? The organization.
Yeah.
But now they're like TV evangelists. And like, I was told my whole life that they weren't of the anointed class, the ones that are going to rule over everything. And now they all are, like, and that was like a surprise to me. Like years after leaving, I didn't know that they were associated with that group. I thought that was just like, I don't know. I was confused apparently, because everyone else seemed to have known that, but
I didn't know anything.
That's really funny.
I just didn't have a dad that was an elder or anything. Okay. I was clueless with so many things, like, you know, that, yeah, I found out later on, like coming out of it, like looking at the shepherding, the flock book and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, which really like is eye-opening, because you're like, how much more do I not know? Like that, you know, I was just totally ignorant.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I noticed the same thing when I was probably 10 or 11 years old. There was this older gentleman who would come to every memorial. He was the grandfather of a friend of mine. And it's like, oh, so Mr. Christensen is here again, and he's going to go and he's going to eat and drink. It's so bizarre. But I always was like gravitated towards these people. Somebody would get this fellowship, I like wanted to go talk to them. Like I always wanted to, like, it's just because, you know, when you're there, for so long and you study so hard and three meetings every week. And it's like, we already went over all this stuff like last year, you know, right. It's like
just repetition 101.
Tired. And so I would, oh my God. Yeah. You never pass by that. And so I would like try to find the interesting people, the interesting things, like this one woman, she was this fellowship since I can remember and understood that I couldn't talk to her, couldn't do anything. And I couldn't take my eyes off her. It's like, wow, you know, this is, you can't be bad. Like you're something else, but you're not bad. I want to talk to you. So you know how you were allowed to like smile at them or nod or whatever. I would like go and make a point of doing it. Or like there was this guy that like I was playing music with this guy and I was like probably 15 or 16 at this point. And his friend Jim had the most beautiful voice I've ever heard. And he was the most flamboyantly gay person I had ever met in my life. And to me, he was the most fascinating person I'd ever met. And a witness. And I just couldn't figure out, how are you doing this? His voice, oh my God, would make you cry.
Singing voice?
It's like, and people would say stuff about him. Singing voice, yes. And people would say stuff about him, which made me like, I really, really want to know this guy, because how are you doing this? And we ended up talking one time, and he said, it just takes extra strength, Christopher. You know, it's like either give in or die. I'm like, really? Wow. So you sing like an angel, and then the rest of your life, you are just sequestering. That's really hard for me to swallow. I couldn't get it. I don't know where he is now, but it's just like, I always wondered, how is it that there's these other people who are surviving perfectly well
in the religion,
being this fellowship.
Oh
yeah. So. But yet they're in the religion. You know what I mean? It's like, you're a person. You are like actually somebody I want to know.
I had a similar thing.
Yeah, I don't,
I was my mom after I left, but there was like a 2 or 3 year period where like my parents would like interact with me in special occasions before they shunned. And she said something like, oh, You sure knew how to choose friends, like condemning like my reason why I'm not a witness and or not a believer is because I chose the wrong friends. But at the same time, throughout my whole childhood, she encouraged me to like make friends and like how to like I had a problem with a friend in like middle school and no, like don't reject them. It's like rare to have friends. Like you should value those friendships. Like she encouraged me to like build real friendships with normal people. And I had friends that were Catholic, Pentecostal, Lutheran, atheist, and like they were my community of friends. We did everything together until I was like 17, 18. And at that 17, 18 time period, my dad was encouraging me to like hang out with witnesses in like the next congregation over because there's no one our age. And so I met all these witnesses. There's probably like 15 different kids we met playing at the gathering, playing basketball. And I met them and they were fine. Like I got to see them like once a month or something where they hung out with each other all the time. But like when they turned 18, like they're all out of the religion. But like a couple of them I made good friends with. They were really cool musicians as well, or skateboarders or snowboarders or like something I was actually interested in. But I had my community already. So like I feel like I learned in an authentic way how to make true connection with people. And then when I came to witnesses, when I was interacting with other witnesses, I was looking for that kind of connection, that kind of true authentic connection and like shared interests and stuff. And so I made friends with like the most interesting people, and I would like not choose to be friends with people who I didn't have that with. And so I still like am connected to a lot of those people because they have since left as well. And those are like really beautiful friendships to this day because we had an authentic, real friendship that had nothing to do really with the religion or that doctrine. And I count them as some of my best friends.
Yeah.
And I love that I have that connection. And I had that background, but I was always looking to like, oh, there's this spark in this person. And I want to get to know, like, what do they really think? What do they really believe? And then people come to me with like really dark, heavy stuff. Like people are like live their whole lives, multiple generations in. And they like a couple young teenage women were like, oh, I was abused by this person, but like, don't tell anybody. It's like, yo, like you had to dump that on me. You felt comfortable dumping it on me. Like, how do I do with that information? You know, or like tell me some secret about something or something that they believe that they couldn't feel like they could tell anybody, but they felt that somehow I was safe to tell that to, which I feel really good about, you know, looking back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a crazy thing to know that like this information, if I were to do the right thing according to their rules, would be to tell on them, but I held it and like didn't turn them in
right.
for their apostasy or their free thinking or whatever that they're not supposed to do, independent thinking. But yeah, true connection and authenticity like has always been a big part of my life. And there were really great individuals that were brilliant, but they were trapped, you know, and I was too in a way, like in this weird space where like, okay, we'll talk about this, you know, they'll talk about this thing when no one's around. Like, cool, we have that like special relationship and
bond. Right. So that's just like Caustic from Psychedelic. He's probably about 6 or 7 years older than me. Now he says he's 7,000 years old, but that's a whole other story.
Hotwise, I want to know more about this guy who's 7,000 year old past lives.
Oh, this, he will tell you, he's really kind of sarcastic, kind of believes, but he would come up to me like, he was from West Virginia, so I wouldn't see him that often. I lived in Pennsylvania, pretty close to there. So, but he was a good several years older than myself. But I would see him at assemblies, and every single day, especially, I don't know how they are now, but you know, these could be four day events. And he would always find me, and he always had this little smirk on his face. And he'd like walk up to me, and he would ask me a question that would be so off the wall, but questioning like what they were just talking about. He's like, hey, you know, and then he would like ask me something like, say, about, you know, the animals like turning on each other after Adam and Eve sinned. Why would they do that? And then he'd like walk away. Mm-hmm. And it always stuck with me. It's like, okay, then I see him coming. I'm like, oh my God, what's he going to say this time? And it would be something that's like, whoa, you know, how, wow. I'm not going to ask anybody this because I might get in trouble for even asking, but that would stick in my mind. And we were just laughing about that the other day. I'm like, why were you coming up to me and doing that? He's like, because he's like, there's just something about you that was just like, you can handle it. We'd both walk away smiling, going back to doing our thing.
Yeah, I have to get going. It was nice to meet you both.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. And I'll stop recording, but it was really a pleasure to meet both of you.
Yeah,
likewise. Yeah.
See ya.
Thank you.
Check out witnessunderground.com for way more videos and information like this if you like this episode. And please subscribe and follow on the different platforms that we're on, especially YouTube. It's important to subscribe there. It's been awesome to see that number growing in the last few months really fast. And I really appreciate everybody paying so much attention to the project. It's been really rewarding. And the one way you can watch Witness Underground right now is on Patreon, patreon.com/witnessunderground. There will be more other avenues coming soon, but that is the one way to directly support the project, directly support the artist grant. 20% of all the money that comes into the Patreon goes to an artist grant that the people in the movie and myself and a couple of others will help decide who gets the money, and then we'll follow that artist as they go create their art project and then have them on again when they've created the thing that they wanted to do. And we're really excited because a bunch of people have signed up, and if you are interested in that, go ahead and go to the website. There's a grant link at the top and you can also apply for that money. And we're already raising money for round two. So when the film is more publicly available is when we will give out the first grant, and then as more people join and the money grows, so we'll do another one and another one. And I'm really excited about that. It's like a really fun part of the activism to kind of give back, not just extract money for a piece of art or activism, but also like create some new art and have that affect people, and people can enjoy, not only the artists can enjoy that moment, but also like the people get to experience that art. And I'm really stoked to see how that all plays out. So thank you for supporting the project. We've had a huge flush of people coming in, and I've been loving getting on other people's podcasts and exposing people to this film who may not have heard of it before. Anyways, absolute joy. And we have another one coming from last week's series. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast, paying attention, subscribing on YouTube.